On today's College Football Inquirer, which new coach has the biggest opportunity to change the fortunes of his program? A lot of intriguing options here. A lot of actually really good fits among the hires this year. So who, should I say the next Kurt Cignetti? No, I'm not going to do that. But who can make their program significantly better? We'll talk about that. Also, our man Stephen Godfrey sounding the alarm on what could be a kind of meh week one. He explains why it happened this way and what can be done to fix it in the future. Plus, Ross Dellinger has a congressional minute for us. All on today's College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer with Ross Dellinger and Stephen Godfrey. I am Andy Staples. And it is the time when hope springs eternal. It's the offseason. Everybody is undefeated for the next 9 months. But guys, we got to start pouring a little cold water on this, right? Like the runaway optimism can't stand. This is college football. We must complain.
Your coach is making all these offseason changes. Your strength coach has got a new plan, right? Your linemen are beefing up.
Your
receivers are the faster than they've ever been.
Team has never been closer.
Yeah, you've never been closer. That's the we're in the honeymoon stage of all these new guys.
But here's my problem, guys, because I am typically a very cynical person, and I'm usually very cynical after the hiring cycle, where I'm like, this guy will work, these guys won't work. I'm looking down the list here, and part of this may be because I had Will Stein on my On Three show. On Monday, Will Stein is the new coach at Kentucky. He was the offensive coordinator at Oregon before he got the job. And he's the one I was hoping would get the Kentucky job because I thought he fit really well there. I thought he understood what they needed to do really well. And after hearing his plan for it and watching what he did in the transfer portal and watching how he staffed up, I'm like, okay, he gets it. He's going to do it. Now, I don't know if it's going to be Kurt Cignetti style, but he's going to make them a lot better. And then I'm thinking, like, wait, James Franklin's going to make Virginia Tech a lot better. Mm. Kyle Whittingham, well, I mean, Michigan fell ass backward into 9 wins last year. Imagine when they're run competently by Kyle Whittingham, what are they going to do? Like, I think this is potentially a very good cycle of coaches who kind of fit where they got hired and can make those places quite a bit better. But the question is, who's the one who breaks out first? And obviously, Cignetti's the one we keep pointing to because he won a national title in 2 years. He immediately flipped Indiana's fortunes in year one. Let's put that aside. We're not talking, you don't have to win a national title. But who, for you guys, are the one or two coaches that you're watching that you think really will turn things around the way the program intended?
Well, I think, Andy, I think you mentioned one. I think that James and Blacksburg is they can't go much more down than they than they were the last few years. So that helps, right? You're already starting at a certain spot. But what he's done in the past at places especially difficult to win, like a Vanderbilt or something like that, he's the one that I kind of circle that feels like the sort of the safest bet to be. I'm not talking about dominant or even maybe making the playoffs, but to turn around that program and consistently be the sort of the team that we've gotten used to from starting from late 90s up until about 5 or 7 years ago is Virginia Tech's like always there hanging around and pulling great upsets and winning 8-9 games a year. Like it seems like he can do what he did at Vanderbilt there. And I think they're sort of investing now. We see that. And oftentimes when you have a coach where people seem to want to rally around and invest, you know, this is good for everybody. So he's the one that to me is like the safest sort of bet to do well and thrive. But I'm fascinated, and I'll hand it off here to Godfrey, but like I'm fascinated by all these young coaches like a Will Stein, Summerall, like all these coaches that came from the American too, you know, Ryan Silverfield at Arkansas now and Golish at Auburn. Like I'm fascinated about how those are all going to work out.
I think, Andy, your optimism is just informed by the market starting to understand what it takes and starting to refit the position of head coach. So if you asked me which one of these hires in this cycle is going to pay off or create a noticeable difference, I'm probably not going to look at the top. Like, I love the Will Stein hire. I feel like we've talked about that a lot already. I scared the crap out of Indiana fans when I was talking about, like, hey, man, maybe Kentucky's the next Indiana. Like, major basketball rivalry, by the way, a different sport. And it's weird, too, because I agree with you on James Franklin, and yet I also think Penn State's going to be better. So that almost feels like imperfect logic. But the ones that I would bet on right now, Eric Morris at Oklahoma State, like, automatically better than the situation that you inherited, and probably Alex Golish at Auburn, automatically better than the situation that you inherited. Now, I'm not trying to speak ill of Morris or Golish. They are young, dynamic coaches, offensive-minded, came out of the American, all that stuff that Ross said. It's just that they're a better fit for college football in 2026, and in this case, dramatically so, than their predecessors. They're going to understand the portal, they're going to understand roster construction, and they're going to be able to, I think, fit the vibe a lot better than the guys before them.
It's interesting that you say that, because there's one hire we haven't mentioned and one replacement, because this I hadn't thought about it this way, but you're right. This is a generational shift is what this is. This is the old generation that worked in the old system, that succeeded in the old system, that thrived in the old system. Mike Gundy, Hugh Freeze, these were considered very good coaches in 2011, 2012, 2013. And they were very successful. This is a new generation taking over for the one that couldn't evolve and adapt. There's a supercharged version of this that we haven't even mentioned, guys. It's Lane Kiffin taking over from Brian Kelly at LSU. Because Lane Kiffin kind of set the model for the Eric Morrises and the Alex Golishes by doing it at Ole Miss first. And now he's going to go do it at LSU. And yeah, I think you're right. I think you've hit on it, Godfrey. This is why can I just come to Nashville and lay on your couch and have you psychoanalyze me? Because I've been racking my brain about why am I so optimistic?
And
you know, that would be a great idea. Back to Nashville to his home.
Yeah.
Which hopefully has power now, right now,
actually. Godfrey? Yeah. Frozen out still. But yeah, sure. Yeah, people asking me for mental health advice is always a great
But you diagnosed it in 30 seconds. You explained it perfectly. That's what this is.
We got rid of old guys.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
the old guys either moved out or got moved out in mass.
Well, what's funny is Kyle Whittingham got sort of in a way moved out and then brought back in by another school.
I don't think of him as an old guy, maybe because he's in such good shape.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe so.
Andy, there is an asterisk under this. It's not old as in like your carbon dated age. It is old in your philosophy, because there's another name under here. You're just asking me, of these hires this cycle, who do I like? There's two G5 hires that I think are going to be impactful immediately. One is Charles Huff at Memphis. I really like I've already had conversations. I'm actually in Memphis right now. I've had some conversations with people around Memphis, and they're really, really fired up in a sort of vintage, like, James Franklin Vanderbilt way. Huff was on Franklin's Vanderbilt staff, I think, for one or two seasons before he went to Saban. They're really, really excited about, there's this big A word that we all like, right? Alignment that Huff has with the aggression that Memphis seeks in becoming that G5 power. And then the other one is an old guy, technically, and a guy as a fan I used to hate, Jim Mora at Colorado State. That's going to be a good hire.
Hey, that's
because
a good one.
He has tinkered with roster construction to the point where, you know what, guys, do you remember the Gene Chizik 5-7 qualification to get to Auburn all those years ago, right? When he got hired by Auburn, and that 5-7 stood out. He won at UConn, right? Jim Mora won at UConn. To go to a hungry program at Colorado State that has tried and failed so many times to bring in traditional football architects, I think this is the best and probably their most consequential hire since Jim McElwain. And Colorado State, I don't know if you guys have noticed this, by the way, in the offseason, the entire west half of the Group of Five is all jumbled up this year because we're changing all the conference. Like, all the conferences are different, right? I'm not going to do this because I failed the other day on a different show trying to name which schools in which conference this year. Don't worry about it right now. But Colorado State could be poised to climb up those G5 ranks. and start biting at that 12 seed. I think Jim Moore is a great hire too, but Andy, he's not old. He adapted. I think it's a micro Whittingham situation where if your philosophy has a certain amount of flexibility, especially on the roster side, you can still, like, we're not just killing everybody who turns 51 here, right? Like, we're talking about, are you forward facing in your philosophy?
Right. Yeah. It has nothing to do with your actual age. As you said, it's not how we carbon date you. It's how you date yourself. It is your willingness to adapt to a new world. And some people stop being willing to adapt in their 20s and 30s. Some people adapt all the way into their 70s. It's just, that's how you're built as a human being. So,
well, yeah. And Lane is 50.
That's crazy. You know, it's like, he does not read as 50. Yeah. I know he's older than me, and we're about the same age, and he's a little bit older than me, but it doesn't, maybe that's me not wanting to admit that I'm going to be 50 soon.
Well, I think it's also, but Andy, you also weren't an NFL head coach like 15 years ago or whatever. He's had such a life before he finally found like footing as a successful power coach in college football.
Right. But and he's one too. Like, you don't even think about him as being, so one of the sort of new age guys that are in this list. I don't know why, it just didn't occur to me, but obviously he is on the list, and the way they've done the portal and quarterback they have, and just given his history of program turnarounds the last two stops, he should be one of the programs and coaches we're talking about that's going to flip, you know, and turn the roster and be successful.
There's a youth movement in the Bay on the West Coast, but it's kind of by force because you have Tosh Lapoy, right? Cal guy, Tavita Pritchard, Cal guy, Stanford guy. Sorry. I just got several tech CEOs are going to dox me.
I would say the Calgarithm
does not
appreciate you mixing those
I'm friends
up.
With the Calgarithm. They sent me their book. So you have basically alumni hires in both of those situations. You have a youth movement in Jamarcus Shepherd, who I really like, the former Alabama and Washington assistant, but Oregon State's going to be a really, really hard job. So Andy, I think that, in lieu of, we talked about this previously, there's no tree to sort of pull off of the way we did for 10, 15 years. So I think, sometimes it's as simple as like, hey man, can we get a young guy in here who's got some energy and understands the portal? Sometimes it's that simple.
Well, and Cal, I think Lapoy is a really interesting hire because Lapoy was not necessarily considered the most elite play caller. But you don't always have to be a great coordinator to be a great coach or to be a great head coach. He always struck me as the person who was most instrumental a lot of the time in building the roster where he was, especially when he was working at Cal in the early days. And, you know, up and down the West Coast, he was at Alabama for a minute. And the fact that Cal still has Jaron Kiave-Sagapolitelli, which I think is probably a result of hiring Tosh Lapoy, it's weird because in some cases we talked about who's going to bring the quarterback. He might have been the only hire who could keep the quarterback.
Mm. Yeah, there's one in Michigan maybe too. You know, there was a thought that the Michigan quarterback could have left and the hire of Whittingham, he's decided to stay. But yeah, no, you're right. And don't you want these days more so what Tosh is, like known for being this hardworking recruiter, roster builder, kind of motivator type of guy rather than the schematic guy? I don't know.
Well, you can always hire those people.
Yes, it's that plus a Rolodex. I think that's the key. Be a hardworking, hard scrabble recruiting guy who understands the roster, can do the portal, and then, but like have a dude next to you or a buddy that you have who can come in and be a dynamic coordinator. That's the difference.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing that I think will be with all these guys is how do the ones who were not head coaches before fill out their staffs? Are they going to be, you know, young, innovative? Are they going to hire the veteran guy? And so Jordan Somerville is the offensive coordinator at Cal, and he was the assistant quarterbacks coach in Tampa Bay. He's working with Baker Mayfield this year. So we'll see. I mean, we just don't know how that's going to work. Will Stein, his put together a fairly young staff, but like Jay Bateman, his defensive coordinator, has been around for a long time. He's worked at a bunch of play, worked for Mac Brown. He was with Mike Elko at Texas A&M most recently. But that will depend. I'm interested because, like, in LaPoy and in Stein especially, in those types of hires, because it was hard for assistants to get jobs this cycle. Everybody wanted a sitting head coach, it felt like. And so I feel like we know what Lane Kiffin is. We know what James Franklin is. We even know what Alex Golish and Ryan Silverfield are. We don't know what Will Stein is as a head coach. We do not know what Tosh LaPoy is as a head coach. And there's a little bit of excitement and optimism in that.
Nobody with a lot of money and state and sort of near-term stakes, like an LSU is probably the most extreme example, but it went on down. Nobody wanted to bet on someone who hadn't had the executive position before. And this happens in the cycle, and then we start to fall in love with coordinators again, right? So I remember on probably three podcasts ago, I used to play this game called Do You Want a Beamer or Do You Want a Chadwell? And this was when South Carolina was making their hire, and it was, did you want Shane Beamer, who was sort of rich in assistant history in the Southeastern Conference? He was a recruiter. He'd been on multiple staffs, Mississippi State, Oklahoma at the time. Did you want that guy who was well-connected in the league? Or did you want someone who was already at executive status running a program at the time, like Jamie Chadwell? And that used to be the dynamic. It shifted so much because of the portal.
It's interesting because Chadwell did not have a good last couple years at Liberty.
No.
If he were the Jamie Chadwell, you know, in his final year at Coastal Carolina, and this were happening now, and Kurt Cignetti had done what he did, and Kalen DeBoer had taken Washington to a national championship game, and like, he would have gotten a power conference job.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Liberty's a fascinating story for the, it's a long off season. We might get there, but like, yeah, what hasn't happened at Liberty is really weird.
So I just, who do we think, like, I was going through the Big Ten schedules because they finally put out what the order of the schedule is going to be. We knew what teams in the league everybody was going to play, but we didn't know what the order was going to be. And I think Matt Campbell has a chance to be maybe the most successful year one guy just by virtue of that. Like, he's got his quarterback in Rocco Becht. Mm-hmm. He's brought in, you know, a lot of the pieces that were really good at Iowa State. And of course, they kept quite a bit of good players who were already on the roster at Penn State. They do not have the most challenging Big Ten schedule. Other, you know, USC, Ohio State, Oregon, they got a lot tougher draw. Indiana got a lot tougher draw. And basically, Penn State's got a little, you know, spot in the middle there where they play USC and Michigan in consecutive weeks. And it feels like if they split that, Matt Campbell might have a playoff team on his hands.
Well, and he did, he's I don't know if he meant to do the Cignetti sort of model, right? But I think he brought in 23 players from Iowa State. 20, somewhere around there. And I think that's the exact number that Cignetti brought from JMU. It was like 23 or 24 or something like that. So you do wonder if we're just going to sort of see that, as we've talked about on the show before.
Yes, good continue coach to happen. Whose team outpunched its weight,
right?
In the other, and obviously there's a difference between the Sun Belt and the Big 12. You know, Iowa State historically a cellar dweller in the Big 12 or the Big 8, and Campbell's the best coach they've ever had, but took the guys that he believes can play at the higher level and pretty much took them all. And that's exactly what Cignetti did.
I mean, if we're trying to look inside just the Big Ten, I guess the sort of like talk radio style question take I've got is like, who needs to show proof of concept faster, Bob Chesney or Pat Fitzgerald? And I think it's Fitz. Mm. I think UCLA will give Chesney a little grace there, and I think he'll need it. He'll need it as far as like they start at Cal, by the way. We're going to talk about week one in a second. That's one of the better games in week one, so look out. UCLA doesn't have as forgivable a schedule, but I think Fitzgerald, it kind of runs counter to the entire theme of this segment, Andy.
I'm glad you brought him up because he feels like the outlier.
I mean, we're going to find out if the old dog has new tricks. And in Fitz's case specifically, the reason why, I'm not saying I dislike or like any hires. I've been doing this for too long to stamp my name on that kind of stuff. I've learned from Luke Fickle. but I am curious, like, what of your Northwestern success methodology would apply to the stakes and expectations at currently woebegone Michigan State. I don't know how much of that applies. Also, is Pat Fitzgerald going to be a portal king? Like, what?
Not so far. And that's the thing. I mean, you look at what the, and I think the everything's accelerated. Like, Cignetti has done this to the whole sport. But I think even before Cignetti, I think people understand in the era of the transfer portal where you can flip a roster immediately that the Lincoln Riley pre-2025 complaints of, well, it took a while to build here. No, it doesn't take a while to build anymore.
You better not.
Get going or you get busy living or get busy dying, basically. Yeah. So Will Stein, I'll give you an example. What did Will Stein do immediately upon getting the Kentucky job? He went out and went after very experienced, probably very expensive offensive linemen in the portal.
Mm-hmm.
Lance Hurd, the starting left tackle at Tennessee.
Yeah.
Tegger Shibola, who started for 2 years at guard at Ohio State, but was kind of, you know, in a rotation situation, might have been, you know, victim of like the Pat Coogan thing from Notre Dame, where he had to go to Indiana. You know, he went and got the center from Baylor, who'd been a 3-year starter. That tells me you understand how this all works.
Wasn't it? I think Lance Hurd was maybe the first in that group because I you know, living in Nashville, mm-hmm. the Tennessee fans reacting accordingly. It's like a new sort of job role in college football where if you have an X amount of experience as a 4 or 5 star, he's a tackle, I believe, right?
Yeah, he's a left tackle, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You can basically go in because this is his third SEC school. You know, he's gone from LSU to Tennessee to Kentucky. Now, it was interesting to me that he was one of the first priorities in roster construction. It was very, very obvious what they wanted to do in year one by going after him. And by the way, Tennessee was not happy to lose him.
So we will see whose method works best, but it does feel like there's been a paradigm shift, to use the corporate buzzword.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. I figure, you know.
That's good.
Every once in a while, we can break them out. We'll circle back, put a pin in it. Yeah, we'll get some synergy going. Now, I think this will probably work better at a lot of schools. I think this is a necessary correction, adjustment to the new era. Now, when we come back, we'll talk about another necessary correction, adjustment to the new era that has not been made and is driving our Stephen Godfrey crazy. We'll be right back. We are back at the College Football Inquirer, and Stephen Godfrey has been telling Ross and I about this for several weeks.
Yeah.
And we've been saying, hold it off, wait till the season ends to talk
about
this.
Wait till things are boring.
Yeah.
But, well, not even that. Before we turned the page to 26, we needed to finish the 25 season. But we are now going to turn the page to 26, and we've talked a little bit about, you know, the new coaches. Let's talk about the week one schedule. Because remember last year we had Texas and Ohio State and Miami and Notre Dame. It was beautiful. Guys, other than LSU and Clemson, it's pretty bleak.
So
in week one.
I have a tradition. I don't know when it started, but it was back in the early like sports website days at SB Nation where the moment confetti would hit on the BCS National Championship, we would whip up a post being like, hey, there's only however many hundred days, you know, left until the next college football season. And here are the week one games to start thinking about. And it was sort of like obnoxious. And it was very similar to the way too early top 25s that everyone does now. So as a reflexive just function, I did that while we were in Miami. And I jumped on fbsschedules.com. I jumped on, was it lsufootball.net, all of our usual haunts to check schedules. It's so bad. It's so bad in week one of this year. Now, I want to walk you guys through how perfect Labor Day weekend, which I believe is the national holiday of college football. I don't want to hear anything about the Rose Bowl. I don't want to hear anything about New Year's Day. On Labor Day weekend, everyone is undefeated. Hope is at its absolute zenith, right? We are just so fired up. It's still nice outside. And you have 3, sometimes 4, sometimes 5 days of college football in a row to start the season off. So last year, Andy, you mentioned like Texas, Ohio State. That was the Saturday noon game, number 1 versus number 3. That night, you had number 4 versus number 9, LSU Clemson, on campus. How beautiful was that? The next day in Miami, you had number 6 versus number 10 in the Notre Dame-Miami game. And then you also, I'm skipping past, you want to talk about helmets and Tiffany brands, Bama and FSU. Thursday night, you had the carnival sideshow that is Deion Sanders, Colorado, playing Georgia Tech. You had quality football the entire weekend. It was perfectly aligned, all right? So I just mentioned 3 games featuring 2 top 10 teams apiece. Now, we don't have the top 25 for next season yet, but I did pull together the top 10 as voted upon by those ruffians at On3, of which one person is on this show. And I'm going to do this really quickly, okay? So let's let's say you're On3 top 10 for next season. I'm going to give you their opening weekend opponent, all right? And this is going to give you an idea of how bad things are going to be in week one. Ready? Ohio State is opening against Ball State. Georgia is playing Tennessee State. Texas is playing Texas State. Notre Dame is playing Wisconsin, although we can talk about the quality of Wisconsin in a second. Indiana, your defending national champions, will open up against Neil Brown in North Texas. Probably the best game on the slate is Oregon opening against Boise State. Texas Tech will be playing Abilene Christian. Texas A&M will be playing Missouri State. Miami will be on the road at Stanford because the ACC has no God. And Oklahoma will open against UTEP. That's
Miami
your top 10.
Miami at Stanford. Wow.
On a, yes. That's, I believe Friday it's on a night, Friday night. Yes.
Wow.
So here are your headline games, guys, for week one. This is where the alarm bell starts ringing. I do want to acknowledge very quickly that in week zero, we're going to have 2 international games that will be fun. So Bill Belichick gets to...
Maybe. Well, it might be fun. The one of them is North Carolina TCU, which was most decidedly not fun.
Not
after
fun
the first
last year.
I said fun. So, I didn't say competitive. Yeah. I said fun. Bill Belichick and North Carolina get to embarrass themselves in a different country against TCU in Ireland. And then here's a new one. In Brazil, North Carolina State plays Virginia in what I believe is a non-conference game because, again, the ACC knows no God. Now, we move to week one. Clemson plays the return game at LSU. I don't know where Clemson, if Clemson will be ranked, probably not, right, entering the season. Is that fair to say?
That is fair to say. Now, I will say... The Dabo versus Lane of it all.
Yes, absolutely.
The excitement. Like that game will be the one that I'm assuming this is the Chris Fowler, Kirk Herbstreet, the 8 p.m.
I'm glad
Eastern
you're thinking
ABC.
Yeah. I'm glad you're thinking
the choice
like this.
Is probably right. It's
well,
that
this,
bad.
It's, yeah,
slate
so I'm glad you guys
bad.
Are. I'm glad you guys are thinking like a programming unit here because on Sunday, Notre Dame is going to play at the at Lambeau, the Packers Stadium, against Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. We know Wisconsin's not going to be ranked entering the season, okay? That's the Sunday night game. We have 2 neutrals that are decent, if not particularly great, which is Louisville and Ole Miss in Nashville at the Titan Stadium. And
which could be Sunday, by the way.
Yes. And honestly, based on this, it probably will be. Baylor and Auburn will play in Atlanta, much to Auburn's chagrin specifically after that game was moved to campus. Mm. Yes, the NIL game. Mm. And then let me rattle through what the rest of the day looks like. This is week one, so you got to spread this across 5 days. You guys ready? This is the best I could come up with. I would also add really fast, and we're going to talk about the why in a second. Miami and South Carolina were supposed to play a game. They canceled it, okay? The ACC, and this will probably be the Monday night, Labor Day night game, has moved SMU and Florida State to Monday.
Yes.
I think. All right. So
that's been moved. That's that's showing up on the ESPN schedule right now as the money.
After that, you have Oregon and Boise, Cal and UCLA, Colorado at Georgia Tech.
Okay.
All right. Cincinnati and Boston College. Get excited. Tulane at Duke.
We both got shafted by Darian Mensah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the Apple Cup.
The Apple Cup week one is
the Apple Cup week one.
I like
wow.
that. I do appreciate I that.
All right. Yeah. So where did all the games go, guys? We can talk about that in a second. Here's what's funny. We're gonna have this Labor Day weekend that's gonna be filled with all this attention on college football from the national sports media, right? The Little League World Series is over and the NFL hasn't started yet. I always like to make fun
League
of
World
it. It's amazing how much national inventory that sporting event gets. Sorry, that's another rant for another day. Week two is without argument the better week, which is going to be really interesting to see. Loaded.
It's
you guys
loaded.
Ready?
I'm looking
you
at
ready?
It right now. Holy
Texas,
crap.
Texas, Ohio State in Austin, Michigan, Oklahoma, A&M, Arizona State, Georgia Tech again, because they apparently just decided to go on a death march this year, plays Tennessee. K-State plays Washington State. You have the border war with Kansas and Missouri, Utah, Arkansas, Alaska, which is Iowa, Iowa State, Cal, BYU. Like, I haven't even gone through the entire list here yet. So, guys.
You got the Duke-Illinois return game.
Yes. I did. Yeah. Dude, for some reason, Mississippi State's going to Minnesota. That'll at least be pointsy. You know, Boise and Memphis in a G5 classic. So this,
Mississippi State's traveling to Minnesota to play at Minnesota?
Hell yeah.
Wow. You talk about getting out of your comfort zone, the SEC.
It's gonna be, I mean, it's week two. It's, yeah, it's week two.
Yeah. The low is going to be like 62.
Yeah.
But, there's nothing. Yeah.
But here, okay. How does this happen? We know it's how this happens because
it's all that stuff Ross talks about, and we all just go, oh, okay, all right. And then the end result is this.
There's no one in charge. That's the thing. There's no one in charge, and that's how this happens. Because everybody's in their own silos doing their own thing, and the confetti drops, and Stephen Godfrey calls up the schedule, and he's like, oh, crap, this sucks.
Everything sucks.
Wait, so wait, hold on. Why am I getting blamed for this?
No, What is it?
What are you blaming exactly?
No.
It is the fractured nature of the sport. It is everybody in their own silos.
Yeah.
Tony Petitti working over here, Greg Sankey working over here, Brett Yormark working over here, and no one going, you know what?
Nobody working for the whole. Yeah.
Well, Ross, it's your reporting.
You don't
reporting
even need to work for the whole. You should be working for yourself in this situation.
But someone should be above you guiding a larger hand, like Roger.
If you're Greg Sankey, you should have seen how bad this slate sucked, gone to some of your schools and been like, hey, these body bag games you're playing, let's move some of them around.
Yeah.
And we're going to put a conference, like, to celebrate the SEC playing 9 conference games, we're going to play some conference games week one.
Well, and who's been the loudest voice for, because we talk about, and we certainly can discuss this again, is the whole week zero thing, right? Moving, making week zero, like the new week one and all that stuff. But one of the loudest voices sort of against that has been Greg Sankey, because he's believed that Labor Day weekend is sort of like the special college football season opener weekend. And so to that end,
then he should have told his teams to schedule some good games on that weekend.
I mean, does this go back to also to like just coaches not wanting to open with any kind of difficult of opponent and want to wait until week two to do that? It's almost 100%. Like they want to play preseason games, right? They like,
so, well, like, and I maybe that's what Ohio should happen. State is a scheduling issue. I think that's
what should happen in week
zero. But Andy,
zero
they both open against
your preseason sort of game.
That's true.
You know,
that's true.
I've got it right here.
But they played in week one last year. Like, why wouldn't they just play in week one this year?
Ohio State is playing Ball State, and Texas is playing Texas. Texas State is a decent team, but Texas is going to be more talented. Ross, what I meant earlier was I think it's the perfect storm. I think it's the combination of coaches not wanting to play a marquee game in week one. I think it's neutral site games losing their luster and the financial incentive. I think it's I'm randomly using my fingers now, the fatigue of season ticket holders, like Alabama fans who I talked to for years, who said, like, I'm really tired of driving to Dallas in Labor Day. I'm really tired of driving to Atlanta and paying exorbitant amounts for these tickets. So those games lost luster, but in the process, it's harder to make marquee games out of one-and-ones. Then it's the 9-game schedule, guys. Miami and South Carolina are supposed to play each other. I know other games have been canceled. Ole Miss Louisville was thrown together there's a cascade effect, and it had something to do with Washington State having to go to Ole Miss last year because of a canceled 1-1 series, I think, with an ACC team. I think it's when I say it's your reporting, it's when fans talk to me about this show and they say, like, oh, yeah, I heard that thing Ross said. I don't really understand how that impacts me. It's always what I always say is just wait. So what has happened here is it's not one thing. It's not just that conferences have moved to 9-game schedules. It's not just that people are tired of driving to the Falcon Stadium to watch a college football game on Labor Day weekend. It's all of those things. And now Andy has this mantra that I've started to lean into, which is that we need the sport to be simple and accessible, and we need it to make sense quickly to outsiders for the health of the sport. This week one lineup is bad. This is not good. This is not the sport putting its best foot forward. And I don't know if there's a solution in the short term to fix this.
Go ahead, Ross.
Here's maybe a solution that has been discussed a little bit I know we discussed it on the show when we talked about the football calendar changing and all this stuff, is opening up week zero for everybody to play, and it naturally becomes the first weekend of the season. And that's when all of your, quote, preseason games are played. And then your week two is Labor Day weekend, where you have all these great big matchups and you start playing
maybe even some conference games. Week one, which is actually week zero sucking, and then week two being, we're having the same complaints. My thing is, you know, there's this little other football league that does fairly well in the ratings, and in fact, a lot better than college football does. The Cowboys and the Eagles play the first week. They're in the same division. They play twice a year.
Yeah. Usually a Thursday night if they can.
You can play conference. And it's funny. There's one league that's figured this out. The ACC's playing some conference games and some non-conference games between its own members.
Part of that, Andy,
and those are some of the most interesting games.
ESPN has given them the Labor Day night slot for the last couple of years. This year it was TCU at North Carolina. It's North Carolina home game, ACC. The year before that, I believe it was BC upsetting Florida State.
Florida State,
I believe. Yep. And then I can't recall before that because I'm in my 40s. But the ACC wants to hang on to that Monday night slot. And they moved some of their inventory in because they had to, because their actual membership had a really weak lineup. I started looking at this before the ACC announced that game. There was not a previously scheduled non-conference game that would have been quality enough for Labor Day night.
Well, like in the Big 12, we bash Texas Tech's non-conference schedule, and rightfully so, because it's terrible. But if Texas Tech were starting against Iowa State instead of Abilene Christian, we probably would view the schedule differently, even if they played the same non-conference opponent. So, Brett, your mark, you're looking for advantages. Like, there's your advantage. If the Big Ten and the SEC aren't going to do this, and I know the Big Ten's done this in the past, where they've put a conference game on Thursday night. Like you had Nebraska, Minnesota a few years ago on the Thursday of week one. But if they're not going to do this and take advantage of it, you take advantage of it. Like, don't just let them Bigfoot you, and don't do the thing they do because they do it. When there's opportunities for better time slots, go get them.
Your coaches and administrators at those schools got to agree too, Andy.
Yeah, you know that's a problem.
Well, I mean, that's your job, that's as a commissioner, to explain to them why it matters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's all why the games stink, right, and you can put a good game out, then more people are going to watch it than to watch it when it's buried in week two or week three or week four or five when you have conference play starting. Because guess what? Everybody's going to watch the good SEC and Big Ten conference games in week six. So move one of your good games to week one when there's not a lot of competition.
Do you guys as Southerners have friends who go to like the beach on Labor Day weekend or like go to the lake or something? You guys, I'm sure we, because I mean, we're all from basically the same part of the country. And so it's funny because I know in Minnesota, actually, the University of Minnesota game is almost, they always try and play their first game on a Thursday night because in the Twin Cities area, it's tradition that you go to your lake house one last time on Labor Day weekend before everything turns into, you know, a hellish ice scape. This is the first time, like, obviously we're professionals, we'll be doing our jobs, but like, this is the first time where I'm like, if I was a college football fan, I'd be like, yeah, go to the beach. Like, we'll watch our team. Like, this feels like a bad week four.
Yeah, you'll this have feels it on like, in the background, but you're not locking in.
No, this feels like a bad week four. Also, if you live in the South, if you live in most of the Big 12 or SEC, it's going to be hot as all blazes. Like, just skip it. This is, I'm telling you, this is not a good weekend. This doesn't get people excited for college football. This is a bad
schedule. Now, I will say that the only, if Greg Sankey or Tony Petitti wants to come back at me about this, if they were to come with this argument, I might buy it.
Okay.
Maybe they're just taking a cue from your friendly neighborhood crack dealer.
Okay. Continue.
The first hit is free. Just a taste.
Yeah, and but then, Andy.
Then they're going to give you the full amount the next
Andy,
week.
Andy, drugs have to be good. There's too much antifreeze in this, okay? This is not a good batch. You need to listen to more Pusher T, okay? If the powder's too stepped on, then the junkies don't dance. Like, I'm telling you right now, Georgia, Tennessee State is not going to make me want to smoke crack the next week, okay? Just isolate that, TJ. Actually, watching Georgia, Tennessee State is going to make me want to smoke crack.
It's like the changing of the guards.
Social media pull quotes in here.
They're pushing out the frauds.
Yeah.
Perhaps to put a bow on this segment, Godfrey, give us the best game each night of the opening weekend. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then there's going to be a Monday game, right? There's five straight.
Yeah.
Some of these haven't been moved yet, though, right?
Right, right. Monday's obvious. That'll be the ACC game. It'll probably be alone. If I recall, in a couple of years...
SMU.
The SWAC and MEAC have moved a game into the Sunday-Monday slot. Yeah. Otherwise, it'll be pretty empty. So, Monday night's going to be SMU-Florida State. Florida State, I don't know if you guys have checked in on FSU Twitter. They're so excited for 2026. It's going to be fantastic, guys.
The Gus Malzahn retirement announcement. Oh, my.
It's like the Iraqi the Ministry of...
The amount of takes it generated from the fan base. It didn't really make a big ripple across the rest of the college. But the Florida State fans...
Yeah.
I mean, just lighting everything on fire.
That's a downtrodden group of human beings right now. Okay, so FSU, SMU.
So that's Monday night.
That's Monday. Yep. Sunday night, obviously, it'll be Notre Dame, probably throttling Wisconsin. Saturday night, I'm sure, as Andy said, Clemson LSU will be the anchor ABC ESPN game. And that's going to be great. Not necessarily great on the field, but the stakes, the Lane Kiffin nonsense, the Dabo nonsense, that's going to be great. Midday. By the way, where's Big Noon going, guys?
Ole Miss, Louisville.
Well, they're not. That'll be decent.
No, I mean that's the midday. Is that the midday Saturday? Oh, they might be Sunday.
What is the Big Noon game?
Ooh,
I'm looking at games emanating from Big Ten and Big 12 stadiums.
It's bad, Bob.
It's bleak. It's bleak.
Andy, I'm curious. Like, does Fox go to the Big Ten or Big 12 and just say, we gotta do something here.
You gotta move a game. Yeah, you gotta shift a game for us.
And they would have to do it fairly soon.
I would guess.
Oregon Boise is not gonna that's not gonna get a Big Noon style treatment.
The
rest of it is
Apple Cup.
Yeah, Apple Cup.
Where's the Apple
Cup
app?
The Apple Cup
Seattle.
Is at
tricky
Washington,
is it?
So
okay,
yeah,
but you can't play that at noon.
No,
well, you could. You play you could. Oregon State at noon Eastern.
You could play at noon. You could play at 9 a.m.
Eggs and eggs, baby.
That's right on the boat.
I mean, what would it take? Just hear me out. What would it take to get Michigan? Michigan Oklahoma. That's an SEC game this year. That won't work.
No. Michigan, Oklahoma is a Big Ten game.
They were Norman. That's right. Yeah. Ann Arbor. So what is it?
That would be the one to move. Yeah. Move
what is it going to take to get Michigan, Oklahoma to week one?
You got to call. You got to call Western Michigan because that's who
we know. Michigan
plays.
Does that. Hey.
Oh wow. Man.
That was belt high. That was belt high and about 88 miles an hour.
The UTEP Miners are Oklahoma's first opponent. So
Scotty,
can we?
Scotty,
can we make this
come
happen?
On, Scotty. What if you could send him a player to be named later? What if you could just work it out that way? You know, just be like, hey, we'll give you a couple, you know.
Will
we'll
Stein took one of his tackles.
Yeah.
to get back to our earlier discussion.
I mean, this is terrible, guy. Like, we can't even fill out the slate. What do you think Fox is
My assignment
right now?
Between now and I'm going to, the people in the business know who Dave Brown is.
You guys know
who Dave Brown
schedule
is. I'm going to tell
guru.
Yeah. Dave Brown is a former ESPN executive who built his own scheduling matrix and essentially is the guy who helps broker a lot of these non-conference games because he has the master schedule and can move things around within the master schedule. I'm going to try to play Dave Brown between now and Thursday. My assignment for Thursday, and I will come back to you and show my work,
okay,
is I will try to figure out how we move the Oklahoma-Michigan game to week one.
Okay. I don't even know if there's a week two game that we could move and anchor. It would really have to be that game, Andy. This is what I'm getting at.
Okay.
It would have to be that game.
That's my assignment. I will take this very seriously.
All right.
I can't wait. All right. When we come back, Ross's Congressional Minute. Oh, yeah. They're not done in Congress with college sports. We'll be right back. We are back at the College Football Inquirer, and it has been a minute See what I did there? Since we had a Ross Dellinger's congressional minute, but there is news. Coming out of Capitol Hill regarding college sports. So, Ross Dellinger, hold on, wait. I told you it's been a while. I got to get the clock out.
I started breathing, like they call it sympathy pains when you're in couples and childbirth. I started doing a deep breath just thinking about it. So, are you ready? Do you feel like you have good cardio right now?
Ooh, I'm trying to take deep breaths, you know, in.
Ross
and
was
out.
Skiing over the weekend. There may seem cold air still in the lungs. All right.
Yeah, a little bit.
I am ready to hit start here. Right. So, Ross, are you ready?
I am.
3, 2, 1.
For a week now, DC has most resembled the frozen planet of Hoth on Star Wars. Cars are stuck, surrounded by 3-foot-high piles of snow. The river is frozen, and huge blocks of ice are sliding off roofs. But none of that has slowed down Congress, Andy. Lawmakers are indeed back to working for the people. And in doing so, despite all the distractions occurring around the globe, key members of the House are exploring changes to the SCORE Act in anticipation for it to again be brought to the floor, potentially by the end of the month. 3 specific concepts under modification in the SCORE Act. Number 1, eliminating the provision that prevents athletes from being deemed employees. Number 2, narrowing the antitrust powers bestowed on the NCAA and the conferences. And number 3, perhaps even shifting oversight of college athletics to a new entity. Now, are these things going to actually be changed? We don't know. Many college leaders and NCAA executives who are behind the legislation must agree on the changes for the changes to actually happen. And we don't know if that's going to happen or not. The second question, will these changes, if they do happen, actually result in a vote on the House floor or passage in the Senate?
Was that under? I think that was under.
All you right. did it. You did it. It was under. You did it. When you said the second thing, there was like 5 seconds to go. There's just no way he's going to make it. No way.
We talked about that second thing, which is if the changes are made to the SCORE Act, does it really matter? Will it pass the House? And if it does pass the House, does that really matter? Because will it pass the Senate? And we heard from Ted Cruz last week who told ESPN that he would not support any bill that does not include the prohibition on athletes becoming employees, which is one of the things, as I mentioned in the congressional minute, that is under modification, is potentially removing that provision. Right. I think that's probably
so the
where
thing that could actually
Cruz's
make it pass the
from.
House, which, by the way, that is a fairly that would be a very significant concession.
It would, yeah.
Yeah.
It would. I mean, think about it. There are 3 or 4 like main points of this bill, the SCORE Act. Number 1, not to have athletes become employees. Number 2, antitrust protection for the NCAA. Number 3, federal preemption of all NIL state laws. So you're talking about taking off one of the three probably biggest provisions in the bill.
I'll dumb it down for everybody. What the original SCORE Act was is the rich guys in charge saying, please make us in charge again, U.S. government.
Help.
Please give us absolute power.
Help.
Believe it or not, not all of Congress was willing to do that.
No.
So there's compromise, and that's how you get things passed through Congress. So it would be interesting because the sweeping antitrust protections, which, again, not even the railroads have, I don't think that was going to work. Probably you're not going to get that through everybody. But if you narrow them, I'll give you an example, guys.
Okay.
I think if you gave them an antitrust protection that regarded eligibility, like what group of people can play college sports, like what age group, who has played in various leagues?
Yeah.
Vis-a-vis.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Oh God, here we go.
One might work. The public might not balk at that.
I have never seen.
Might not balk at that.
I've never seen so many people pissed off that some guy from the G League is playing basketball at Alabama right now. We could have solved so many problems in this country if people had that level of indignation about something that actually mattered.
Yes.
Holy crap.
There is some serious, passionate, angry people out there about that issue.
So many hurt butts.
And Charles Bediako, by the way, Alabama 1-2 in games where he has played. They lost to Tennessee in Florida.
Hearing this week,
Missouri.
Huh? Friday?
Yeah.
Hearing on Friday?
We'll see what happens, but...
Dude, if I had college basketball's ratings, I'd put pro wrestlers out there. I'd be doing anything I could to make that sport better. Because right now, they could use something.
I don't think it I don't think it's really increased the viewership of that, of the Alabama games that much, but everybody does check in like, hey, did the G League guy win or lose?
It's increased the amount of old white, ain't it just absolute pearl clutch and indignation. Oh my God.
Now, I did think it was funny that there's a former UCLA player who has actually played in 10 NBA games in his career. So he's been on like active NBA roster member. He's like, you know, I think I'm going to try to come back too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think this is awesome. I think retired NFL players should be able to come back and play in college. I think that would be fine.
Yeah.
I have no problem. I really just don't care.
Phillip Rivers shows up at NC State like, hey, let's go.
I want Scott Bakula in Necessary Roughness. That's what I want. You get that reference, so you know what a blockbuster is, folks.
Now, listen.
Yeah.
Necessary Roughness is the best college football movie ever made.
Oh, boy.
I'll die on this hill.
Okay. Wow. I feel like a take's coming.
It is the only college football movie that gets eligibility correct. Paul Blake was eligible because he never enrolled in college.
Right.
He was going to go to college. He had a scholarship somewhere.
He was a farmer, wasn't he?
His father was sick and dying, and so he took over the family farm.
Yeah.
Right.
So that is how Scott Bakula, who only had one cadence and one snap count, and I don't understand why the defense didn't just time up the snap. That's why he could play. Now, Sinbad's character, Andre Krim, who is Scott Bakula's teacher in one of his classes.
Mm-hmm.
There is a scene in that movie, I'm not kidding, where Sinbad, who's probably 42 at the time, but playing a 23-year-old TA, accurately explains
that's BDC.
Why Andre Krim, great two-way lineman, is eligible to play.
Mm-hmm.
Because he redshirted, he earned his degree in 3 years, he earned his master's in 1 year, he's a PhD candidate teaching a section of a discussion group in a science class. So he is a redshirt senior who happens to also be a PhD candidate.
Wow, it's look at Hollywood.
And I,
look at,
like, I
look at Hollywood getting it
200
right.
200 times.
This is amazing.
Before I was like, wait a second, why is Andre Krim eligible? And then I watched it again, and there's a scene, and they explain the whole thing, and the program would never. What other college football movies?
There's not a lot.
All the
dude.
Other ones are,
I know
are,
them all.
Are
I know them all.
Picks, like Vera Marshall and
correct.
Like things that actually happened.
They're pretty bad. So, it's a very thin
Rudy
pool.
Would never, Rudy, you know, may or may not have been offsides.
He was offsides. So. Sorry, Sean. And you know that Kathy Ireland correctly predicted Katie Nida, and I'm blanking on the Vanderbilt soccer player who kicked for Vanderbilt, made a bunch of people really mad. A lot of people harken back to the program, Andy, but you're selling me on Necessary Roughness.
Now, the only unrealistic part is when the center, Manu Manu the Slender.
He's still going, Ross. Amazing.
It means runt of the litter. My people are very large.
I haven't seen this movie in 20 years. I don't know the people he's talking about.
The final
Maybe 30
scene,
years.
I
they are
do.
Playing the By God Texas Colts.
Yeah.
I believe they're going for two. But Paul Blake gets the ball, and he's been getting massacred by
Googling
this linebacker
this movie
from Texas.
He's
yeah.
Googling this
named
movie.
Flat Top.
1991, Andy.
And
I saw it in theaters,
right? Manu Manu the Slender hits Flat Top so hard just before he crushes Paul Blake, hits him so hard that his face mask flies off his helmet and he spits up blood. Like, this man is deceased. He has been murdered on the field.
Sinbad looks like he's 38.
They just celebrate around his body.
In Sinbad's defense, he was sort of born 38 and has just kind of eased into it by the time he got his sick.
Yeah.
By the way, Sinbad was
he's supposed to be
thing going.
Oh,
oh
yeah.
Yeah, no,
oh,
he was
yeah.
like
early
a,
90s,
he was
late
selling
80s.
Out arenas
oh, yeah.
and stuff. Yeah,
yeah, for sure.
Andy, since it's a long offseason, you and I, maybe we can talk offline and turn it into a segment. There was an entire college football game plot in Batman versus Superman because Zack Snyder is such an ardent Wisconsin football fan. They cut it. They shot it and cut it from the film.
Oh,
yeah,
we need to
I've
see
seen
if
it.
We can get that.
I've seen
that
it,
was
yeah.
like,
it's in the extended
he
cut.
Was 35, by the way. He was 35.
35? Yeah.
Yeah, he was supposed
one
to be
more,
21.
One more Necessary Roughness thing. Featherstone, the receiver who couldn't catch.
Of course.
That actor played another very famous college football movie character.
Hmm. Hmm.
Do Do we know which character?
Oh, Andy's going to get me on movie trivia. I'm going to be pissed off for 2 months.
I'm not bad at this game. Very bad.
Dwayne Davis is the actor's name. He played tight end in Illinois.
Yeah, yeah.
He was Featherstone, the receiver who couldn't catch. He was also Alvin Mack in The Program.
That's right. Can you name all the real schools that were in The Program?
Georgia Tech, Iowa.
Mississippi State. Florida State, South Carolina. Yep. No, they played in Williams-Brice. They didn't they use South Carolina. They played in Williams-Brice.
No, I have a whole thing on The Program. The guy who did the football stunt work. Todd Ellis, the former South Carolina quarterback who is the play-by-play guy for the Gamecocks now, his brother is the one who does all that stuff. He played at Appalachian State, and he choreographed all the football scenes in The Program. And in Varsity Blues and in pretty much all your favorite football movies. But
so there's a business now.
Dwayne Davis played Alvin Mack and Featherstone, and his son Wyatt was a very good offensive lineman at Ohio State a few years ago.
And that concludes the Congressional Minute.
Yeah.
How we got off topic. Necessary roughness.
We got a little bit off topic. It's okay. Nobody wants to talk about Congress anyway, you know.
Well, until it affects them, no one wants to talk about Congress.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like there's not a lot of accurate coverage of NCAA eligibility. And obviously, it's something we're talking about a lot now.
Yeah.
But if you'd really like to understand NCAA eligibility, watch Necessary Roughness.
Watch Unnecessary Roughness.
Or sue the NCAA, but make sure you do it in the most local court possible. Shout out to Joey Aguilar. Call Tom Mars
if you want to know about eligibility.
Tom Mars,
you owe
me a phone call, buddy. I know you listen to the show.
We will talk about that on Thursday. Because we will. When in doubt, move it to state court. That's the motto of college sports these days. We'll talk to you Thursday.